Jokic behind his back. What a take by Jokic.
Such a sitter. Wow.
Hey, Nuggets Nation. You're listening to the Pickaxe Podcast. Now, here's your hosts, the Denver Stiffs.
Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the Pickaxe Podcast. I am Zach Mikosh, your host. We are back again this week with another huge week of Denver Nuggets news. Paul Millsap is officially a Denver Nugget. That took about 2 years for Tim Connelly to finally get it done, but he does. Paul Millsap is going to play for the Denver Nuggets next season. We also now know that Danilo Gallinari is not going to play for the Denver Nuggets next season. He is moving on to the Los Angeles Clippers. I want to talk about that. I also want to talk about a little bit more about the offseason and what the Nuggets still might do. They've got quite a bit of a jam at power forward, and they've got they're not really sure what they're going to do at point guard. They got issues at small forward. I want to talk about that. And then finally, Summer League is here. We've seen the very first game for the Denver Nuggets. I want to talk about who stood out. I want to kind of recap the game a little bit. And that's going to be our show. We do have two co-hosts. We had a little audio trouble, recording trouble, so we missed our original intro, so I had to re-record it. But I do have two co-hosts. It is another all-CSU Rams cast, which always makes me super happy. Mike Olson and Ashley Douglas joined me this week, so we're going to go ahead and we're going to jump into that right now. We'll jump into Paul Millsap first, and then we'll get to the rest of it. All right, so let's get right into it. Let's talk about what the thing that everybody wants to talk about, which is Paul Millsap. The Nuggets finally get him in a Nugget uniform. As I was saying, they've been chasing him for, you know, probably about 2 years. I can remember hearing rumors about him. I can think of at least back to the off season before last season when there was talk about maybe trading for Millsap. Back then of course the Hawks, they don't re-sign Al Horford. He goes to the Celtics, so that kind of killed any potential deal. They get him. Mike, let me ask you first, what are your thoughts on Millsap and the signing?
I mean, you know, you look at his game and you can see why they've been chasing him for a while. And frankly, he fits even when we were excited about him, you know, a year ago, 2 years ago, he fit into what we were trying to do pretty well. You bring him in now after some of the shifts that the Nuggets made this last year, and he's all of the things that was good about Kenneth Faried plus, right? And so it's a big step forward at the position as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, you bring it. It's a good kind of comparison to Faried, because, you know, when you think about Faried, he's a guy who obviously the number one thing he brings you is rebounding, and Millsap's going to bring that for you as well. But when you think about some of Faried's weaknesses, particularly I think of defense, and then he can't really stretch the floor for you at all.
Exactly.
Millsap, he does both of those things really well. The only thing that Faried does and Millsap can't do really well is, of course, is finish above the rim. but that's the thing, is that they still have Faried, and I think now, like, it'd be interesting to see if they keep him. And we're going to talk about, like I said, we're going to get into the more free agent moves, or more offseason moves we may think they may do. But because Faried now kind of really can just fill that role, instead of being relied on as the starting power forward, he really can just fill the role as the energy guy off the bench, which I think most people would agree is where he's best. Ashley, what were your thoughts on the Nuggets bringing in Paul Millsap?
I think it was about time that they made a really great free agency move and were aggressive about it. Obviously, they paid through the nose to get Millsap, and, you know, if they need that key player, which they did, you know, it was appropriate to make that move. I think also, given the fact that the Nuggets have such a young core and they did, you know, let Gallinari leave, filling that leadership role was such an important need for them, and I think they took care of both of those needs with one person. So I'm really excited to see him play with Jokic in particular, but really all the Nuggets young core. It's going to be a really fun season.
Yeah, absolutely. You bring up a good point too, and even, you know, it's kind of one of the more down points of the season last year was Michael Malone kind of early on kind of called out the team and said they didn't really have any veteran leaders. You know, the two young guys were trying to lead the team. And so you wonder now, I mean, how much of that was obviously, I mean, Galloway had to be one of the guys he was talking about. And of course he came back out later and said that he kind of really misspoke, but you wonder how much of a leadership role Gallo really wanted to do in the Nuggets locker room. And it's understandable because, listen, he was in a contract year. He's 29. I mean, he's right in the middle of his prime. He's not trying to mentor, you know, guys and teach them how to play in the NBA. He's trying to win basketball games. This is his moment. So I kind of get that from his viewpoint. Whereas Millsap, he's a little bit more longer in the tooth now. He's, of course, 32. So I could see, and he just has a better reputation as leader. So yeah, I think you bring up a great point there about that role that he fills, which the Nuggets really, you know, you have a guy like Jameer Nelson or you have a guy like Mike Miller, but these are guys who, I mean, Mike Miller especially, I mean, he doesn't really play, right? So it's kind of hard for a guy like that to be the leadership voice in the locker room when he's not really getting any minutes out on the court. Paul Millsap's going to play 30 plus minutes a game. So there's no doubt that he's going to have that sway with guys, and I think that's a big key to getting that leadership for the Nuggets. What I thought was interesting that you mentioned, though, too, is that they paid through the nose for him, because they did. There's no doubt about it. $30 million a season, 3 years, that's $90 million. Of course, the last year is not guaranteed, or it's essentially a team option, so the Nuggets can just expire the contract 1 year early. But 3 years, $90 million, that would actually be the second largest contract that's ever been signed by a Denver Nuggets player. Only Kenyon Martin's deal was longer, and his was for 7 years. Or, I'm sorry, his was worth more. His was $92 million, but it was 7 years, so it was nowhere near the money per season. Paul Millsap, highest dollar amount per season the Nuggets have ever paid a player.
I think it's a
grown-up
move. But
it was only three seasons.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I think it's a grown-up move for the Nuggets, right? Because if you think about it, you know, they really haven't gotten serious about having a leader on the team, because they thrust Emmanuel Mudiay at 19 years old into the leadership spotlight because they're like, meh, we don't really have anybody else, so go ahead and do it. And I really think they set him up to fail. So I like the move they made with Millsap, because it shows they really are serious about, you know, putting somebody in a leadership role that's ready for it, and they want to make a move for the playoffs at this point.
Yeah, you know, I think you're definitely right about the fact that he Millsap adds this sort of leadership role to the Nuggets that maybe they didn't have before with a guy like Gallo, because, you know, Gallo, he was in his contract year. He's 29 years old. I mean, he's at a point where he's trying to win basketball games. So I don't necessarily hold that against him. As far as maybe not wanting to be, you know, not wanting to be the teacher or the mentor of the locker room. Whereas a guy like Millsap, I mean, he's a little bit older, so maybe he's a little bit more comfortable with that role. What I think, though, was interesting, or what I really liked about the contract, though, was the years that they gave him, because it's 2 years, and then the third year is a team option. And it's not common to see that type of deal for a guy who's 32 years old. You see the team options. I mean, obviously all rookie deals have 2 year team options on them. And you see those typically for like second round picks or younger players. It's not as common, especially an older player who's also a caliber of player, Paul Millsap. Mike, what did you think about the contract? I mean, how big of a deal is it for the Nuggets to get that kind of steal in terms of years and team option?
You know, I mean, you have to at least wonder how much of that was influenced by, you know, people do the deals that they have to do. And in this case, you know, the market for Millsap, a lot like the way the market for George Hill, you know, recently kind of started to shrink really quickly. And I think a lot more unexpectedly than either of these guys expected it to. I think what I liked about the deal, and I think, you know, because it's funny when you're talking about it being a steal in terms of years, but, you know, Ashley said earlier, kind of the idea of paying through the nose, and I actually kind of weirdly agree with both of those things. We're paying him well for what I think is going to be a great skill set over the next couple of years. We'll see where things are at, and maybe we extend him even further, but we've put ourselves in a very friendly spot, and I think we could do that because there weren't that many other takers out there, including, you know, the team that he was sitting with at the moment. So,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was kind of one of the more shocking things that came out, was that Atlanta didn't even offer him a contract. And then you're right. Also, I mean, it was like the Nuggets, the Suns, and the Timberwolves were all the three teams it looked like it was coming down to. And suddenly there was like suddenly Minnesota was out, or I think Phoenix was suddenly out. Decided that they were basically going to tank. And then Minnesota suddenly decided they were out. And then it was really down to the Nuggets. And I think, I'm sure, like, you know, a team like the Kings probably put in a call, maybe a team like the Nets. But I think at that point, Millsap probably looked at, okay, where's the best situation for me?
Yeah. And I think the point that you're making really well, Zach, and I'm sorry to interrupt, is I think the point you're making really well is it these, you know, how is each team deciding to compete next year, right? And so the Suns look at what they'd get back in Millsap and realize that's really not our current trajectory, right? And it's not that he still wouldn't play well for them and actually put up a ton of points. They might have been able to offer him more time and more money. It seems like a lot more realistic at times about, does this make sense over the long haul? And what I like about this contract is it helps Denver be flexible about the long haul, basically.
Right, exactly. It's like a perfect bridge, you know, from, okay, so we had the Gallo era, which is we'll talk about that. We'll move right into that here next. But, you know, we had the Gallo era and that's kind of done now. And so you've got Millsap, who's, it's not the Millsap era. I mean, the Jokic era is fully here, but Jokic is still a really young guy. I mean, he's what, 22 years old. So he's got a ways to go. He's really not going to hit his prime for another 4 to 5 years, you know? So this 3 year deal, or hopefully he's hitting his prime in 3 years, right? So this Millsap deal kind of carries you through that. And then you're hoping these guys like Jokic, Murray, Gary Harris, all these young guys, they're starting to just get into their prime. And so it's a nice bridge that then doesn't hamstring them, towards the end of that deal, which we sometimes were worried about. You know, I mean, some people worried about the Nuggets giving him a 4 year, $120 million, maybe more than that, for him. You know, he could have got 4 years at 30, starting at about $34.5 million, and getting increases from there. That would have been crazy.
Yeah, no kidding.
That would literally have been crazy, like actually crazy.
Yeah.
Right, and that's
don't do that.
And when, what was so interesting, I think, about what we've seen in free agency is that's like the type of deal you would have seen a lot of teams giving out last season. We saw, I mean, Portland, how many dumb contracts did they give out? And that wasn't the only thing. I mean, like Jan Mahimi, I think, got some ridiculous deal where he's making like $14 million a season to be a backup center. It's just everybody last year was giving out these nuts deals. And then this year, I think, like Mike, as you said, everybody's kind of got a different approach, a much more long-term viewing approach. So let's move on. I want to talk next about Danilo Gallinari, because he, of course, is gone now to the Los Angeles Clippers. The Nuggets, they do a sign-and-trade, which is at that point, it's all you can do if you want to get anything for Gallo. So they get a sign-and-trade, they get a second-round pick, which is, you know, just basically a thank you for helping them facilitate a three-team trade to get that done. Let me ask you first. I want your thoughts on losing Gallo and the return they get for him.
Well, Gallinari has long been one of my very favorite players, and so I'm sad that he's no longer playing with the Nuggets. It sucks, but I do think that the Nuggets were holding him back. I think he might have been holding them back a little bit. I just don't think the situation fit any longer now that Nikola Jokic is kind of here. And, you know, Gallo was used to kind of being the guy for a little while, and I think now Jokic is the guy. So I'm happy for him to move on to Los Angeles. I'm excited to see what he'll do there. But I'm disappointed with Denver. I feel like they really missed out on so many opportunities in this offseason. I think we're going to talk about that later. But it's like you probably knew Gallinari wasn't going to come back. And so you waited, and now you get a measly second round 2019 pick for what used to be one of your best players when you could have really made a great deal and you could have been smart about it. And I just feel like it was such a wasted opportunity.
Right. I mean, I feel like there was definitely probably an opportunity for them at the trade deadline to get probably a first round pick in this draft. And Tim Connelly, even he said it on a radio interview on Altitude. He basically said, you know, in hindsight, if we knew we weren't going to make the playoffs, they would have moved some guys. So obviously Gallo is probably the guy he's talking about because now he's gone.
But that annoys me too, because it's like, all right, if you thought you were going to make the playoffs, was your goal the 8th seed first round exit? Like, really? Like, you're going to keep guys knowing that that's the plan. Like, that's not a good plan still.
Right.
You know,
I know. And I totally agree with you. I think that probably comes more, even probably up higher than Tim Connelly. I think that probably comes all the way from the top, and the Josh Kroenke and the Kroenke's looking at it and be like, hey, we're last in attendance. We really could use making the playoffs to give somebody something. You know, the Broncos didn't make the playoffs this year. This could be our shot. Instead, they came up short, and then they didn't get anything for Gallo in the end. Mike, what were your thoughts on Gallo leaving?
So first off, I'm sad. I'm also sad to see Gallo go. I mean, if nothing else, to me, Gallo was always an amazing reminder that somehow, some way, the Nuggets actually won the Carmelo Anthony trade. You know, and that just that was always just a nice sort of something every time he was, you know, standing at the line pouring in points. So I will miss what he brought to the team. He was always a pro. It sucks some of the things that happened to him and for him along the way, but we could talk about that the entire rest of the show. I'll miss him in that regard. And while I also, you know, hindsight being 2020, I agree with both of you. It would have probably been wisest to have gotten as much as you could for him midway through last year and rolled the dice on what you got through the rest of the year.
Right.
But I don't necessarily think that shooting for the 8th seed is the best strategy overall. And I think, frankly, it was probably better in ways that they didn't achieve that, but they should have gotten more out of Gallo for it. By the same token, does it make the experience any different for those young guys who, instead of 2/3 of the way through last season going, okay, we're gonna just change what is important about the rest of this year, how much did it change their games to spend, you know, all the way up to the last two games of the season last year just busting their butts trying to make something happen? I think there's at least something to that as to, you know, God, the way you saw, you know, Beasley and Hernan Gomez playing tonight, those guys were playing like guys who were fighting for the playoffs last year, you know?
Right. Right. Absolutely. The thing that I think was really interesting about them making or not making the playoffs, or versus the argument if they had. Like I said, I understand it from kind of a financial viewpoint and from a marketing sense why they wanted that to happen. But I think what you guys kind of allude to, so if you end up making it, you're still an 8 seed. You're getting swept by the Warriors. You'll hear some crazy opinions out there about how the Nuggets could have taken the Warriors to 6 games. I don't think there's any way possible. I think the Warriors handle them in 4 quite easily. And if you know you're going to chase Paul Millsap, I don't think that changes, right? If you make the playoffs and lose in the first round, if you don't, I don't think your position on chasing Paul Millsap in free agency changes. And you kind of know back at that point, all the way back to the trade deadline, like, hey, if we're going to sign Paul Millsap, given where the cap's going to be, given where we're going to be, we probably aren't going to be bringing back Gallo. It's going to be tough to do it, to bring them in both.
Well, and I have an unpopular opinion, but
all right, let's hear it.
I'm not perfectly sure, especially as we try to lean towards defense. You know, maybe at least not 29th out of 30 in defense this next season. You know, Wilson Chandler might actually be the better fit next to the other two guys in the front court now, as compared to Gallo, because he's kind of that. He fits everything guy. He plays the game that you're trying to play, right? And he might be a better fit in what we do. with Millsap.
He's also a heck of a lot more versatile than Gallo is in terms of defending. You know, Wilson's a guy who can defend shooting guard and small forward and power forward fairly easy. He can probably even defend some centers if he gets switched on him in like a small ball lineup. And he can actually hold his own against point guards as well. So he's one of those guys who can give you that versatility on defense. And he's got the ability with Wilson. I think on defense, it's always just a question of effort.
I think Wilson also is like, he's not afraid to not be the guy. He's okay with that. And I think, you know, it's really important on teams to have guys who are totally willing to be role players and take second fiddle to whoever the guy is on the team. That's, I don't know that you would have gotten that out of Gallo.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about Wilson is as long as he knows which guy he is, as long as he knows which role he's in, I think he'll be happy, which is one of the benefits, I think, of Gallo leaving and the Nuggets. We'll get into this after the break, and I want to talk about I think they're a little bit thin at small forward with Gallo gone now, but one of the nice things that it does is the problems they had last year specifically with Wilson Chandler was trying to find him consistent minutes. Well, now he's got that. Now he's the starting small forward. So there's no question about it anymore. So it solves that issue if nothing else. Of course, the Millsap signing has now made them have way too many power forwards, which is their new issue. But at least in terms of Wilson Chandler, that issue solved. I want to get your guys' opinion right before the break. I want to get your opinion on this. Ashley, I want to ask you first. The Clippers now, of course, Chris Paul goes to the Houston Rockets, but the Clippers still have Gallo, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan, and now they have what's the Serbian guy's name?
Milos Teodosic, and
I think it's pronounced Teodosic, but
Teodosic, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was. We were. I think we were debating. Gordon might have been debating this earlier today.
My Serbian is non-existent. So
he's a little rusty. No, that's what
mine is weak too. I feel you.
That's what Gordon had to do. I think he just tweeted it out. He was like, hey, one of my Serbian followers, let me know. How do we pronounce this?
Oh, that's awesome.
I think it's Teodosic was what they said. But so, yeah, him. And then I guess Austin Rivers, right, is probably your starting shooting guard.
Rivers, yeah. They've got Teodosic and Gallinari. Yeah.
So what do you think? I mean, is that a team that makes the playoffs?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it is. And it just sucks because it's another Western Conference team that we made better. Right. You see him go to another team, and then they start getting all the, they re-sign Blake Griffin, and they get, Teodosic, and obviously Rivers leaves a little bit to be desired, but I'm sure they're going to, fill that a little bit, and DeAndre Jordan, and I'm so bitter. But yeah, it's a playoff team for sure.
Mike, would you concur?
I would say it depends on one thing for me. If Gallo and Blake both play more than 60 games next season,
yes,
that is absolutely a playoff team. No doubt about it. Even with, the just say no to nepotism t-shirts that Doc and Austin are selling right now. I think if either or both of them doesn't cross that 60 game mark, I think all bets are off. So we'll see.
Yeah, that is a great point because you're absolutely right. And I mean, obviously Gallo here in Denver is well documented his injury history, but Blake Griffin as well, another guy who's had some injuries. That guy's had some weird ones as well. Remember he broke his hand 1 year because he went punching an equipment manager was the how he got that injury. So it's
just keep it classy, Blake. We'll be fine.
There you go. So as long as Blake's not knocking anybody out, this time around they should be all right. I agree with you guys. I think they've got the talent. They're definitely a back end playoff team. I think there's a group of teams. Nuggets are going to be included in that, along with teams like the Clippers, the Blazers, the Timberwolves. I'm trying to think if there's another. Memphis will be another team I'd throw in there. I'm probably forgetting one or two because there's a lot of really good. I think if you were talking playoffs, there's to me clear kind of top four, which is Golden State, Houston, San Antonio and Oklahoma City. I think those are definitely the four best teams right now in the West. And then there's about maybe six or seven who can vie for those next four spots even Utah, man. I know they lost Gordon Hayward, but they're still got Rudy Gobert. They still got a pretty good team over there. So Tell you what, that's not getting all the way into the playoff seeding for next year is not part of our breakdown. So we'll go ahead and we will take a break here. I want to stay on the off season though. I want to talk about what the Nuggets do next, if they do anything next. And then, like I said, we had the Summer League game tonight, so we want to get into that. So we'll go ahead and take a quick break, and we will be right back. We've all been there. When the budget's the tightest or a time is the shortest, that's when disaster strikes. The last thing anyone wants to deal with in these times is an electrical issue in their home or business. Maybe your light suddenly won't turn on, or maybe a home inspector wants that electrical service changed before you can close out on a property you're selling. Heck, maybe it's not even an emergency at all and you're just looking to finish out your basement or get some power ran to that new AC unit. Whatever your need may be, give Sun Electrical a call. They're a family-owned and operated business that serves the Front Range, and you can be assured that you'll not only get the highest quality service, but you'll also get the most affordable price as well. Mike, the owner of Sun Electrical, will come to your home or business personally to evaluate your situation and provide a free estimate, and he stands by the work Sun performs as a fully licensed and insured electrical contractor. So give him a call, 719-659-6888. Don't be fooled by the phone number, as they'll serve the entire Front Range from Colorado Springs to Fort Collins and everywhere in between. That's 719-659-6888. 719-659-6888. Sun Electrical, the home of truly affordable electrical work.
Zach from Denver Stiffs here. I want to tell you about one of my favorite artists from right here in Denver, Colorado, and that's Porter Laurie. You're listening to his single, Escape My Skin, right now, and if you're liking what you're hearing, his album, Hell or High Water, is available on iTunes. Also, you can check out his website, porterlaurie.format.com. That's porterlaurie.format.com. Give them a listen. I make it all in. I broke out of every place that tried to keep me in, but I can't escape my can't escape my skin. It kills me not to know this, but I've all but just forgotten what the color of her eyes were, and her scars, or how she got them. As the telling signs of age rain down, a single tear is dropping through the valleys of an aging face that this world has forgotten.
All right, everybody, welcome back into the Pickaxe Podcast. I am Zach Nikosh. We are joined by Ashley Douglas and Mike Olson. We spent the first half of the show talking about Paul Millsap and Danilo Gallinari. We worked our way through a power outage that happened over at Mike's.
Dang it. Dang it.
it's been a wild one. but so we were talking obviously a lot about the off season because we're right in the middle of it. But I want to stick to it, but I kind of want to start looking forward now. We've talked about Millsap, we've talked about Gallo. Now let's look forward to what the Nuggets are going to do next, because I mentioned a little bit before the break. The Nuggets still have six power forwards, like six true power forwards on the roster right now, which is insane. And they got to do something. So when I'm thinking about, okay, well, like, what are they going to do next? There's three issues I see with this Denver Nuggets roster right now. And the first one, of course, is they've got a ton of power forwards, at least three of which. And here's the problem. If you have a ton of power forwards and a bunch of them are scrubs down at the end of the bench, okay, whatever. Or if they're young prospects. Like, I don't mind Tyler Lydon being down on the bench right now because I think he's going to play a lot in D-League, and I don't think he's going to get a lot of minutes, and that's fine for a rookie. We've seen that plenty of times. Guys like Gary Harris didn't get a lot of minutes as a rookie. Turned out great. But really for me, it's Trey Lyles. I don't understand where he fits because Millsap's your starter. and then Fareed's obviously your backup, and then you're not sure what you're going to do with Trey Lyles, and then the other guy is Juancho Hernangómez, which Juancho, I think, okay, you can slide him over and play him some more small forward, but Trey Lyles cannot play small forward. But so if you picked him up, this 21-year-old who you got kind of fairly cheap because he was buried on the bench in Utah, you can't just bring him back and now bury him in the bench in Denver. That it doesn't make any sense. So that's number one is the power forward issue. The number two issue is kind of what I was alluding to there, is a small forward position, a little bit thin on depth. You've got Wilson Chandler. He's your starter, no problem. But your backup choices are really essentially Will Barton, who's more of a two guard, or Juancho, who's more of a power forward. So if you could get somebody who fills that backup role, that might not be a bad thing. And then finally, what are they doing at point guard? Jamal Murray, Jameer Nelson, Emmanuel Mudiay, that's the same combo they had last year that really didn't give him great point guard play. I don't think you want to go into next season doing that. So that would be those are my three things that they think they want to address. Ashley, what about you? Kind of the same things, or is there something else you think they should be looking at?
Well, basically the same thing, but I think, you know, I always think about the San Antonio Spurs. They have such an empire of success. And the reason they do is because everybody's role is very clearly defined and explained to them. And that's basically the problem with the Nuggets. Like you said, like who's playing small forward? Who's playing power forward? Who's not going to be on the team next year? Who's playing at the point guard position? You know, really the only certainty we have is that, you know, Jokic and Paul Millsap are going to be kind of the power forward, right, and center, you know, and so
right.
I really
and
think
Gary Harris is your shooting guard. I mean,
right.
That one I think is
Gary Harris is amazing and a great staple, but you know, they just have to clean it up. They have to decide who are we going to stick with? You know, what is their role going to be? Let them know, you know, if Lighton's going to go down to the G League, great, tell him that. You know, if Fareed's going to remain and be the backup, awesome, let's do that. But whatever it is, pick a plan and move forward, because like you said, they cannot start the next season with so much uncertainty. I do think they need to move Jameer Nelson quickly. I don't think he needs to stay around anymore.
That's like, you know, every coach has their safety blanket, and Jameer is definitely Coach Malone's safety blanket for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, he kind of is. That's a good point.
His will be.
Just like Anthony, he is Jameer Nelson is to Michael Malone as Anthony Carter was to George Karl.
I don't know who's sucking their thumb now in this picture in my head, but I'm getting really uncomfortable.
That was so funny.
So besides maybe getting them a teddy bear, what else do you think, Mike, that the Nuggets should be trying to do this offseason?
I mean, you know, how many teams can start, you know, five guys on the floor who all play the same position, right? So, I mean, it's you got something going for you there. I mean, your point is well founded. I kind of like Juancho at the three. So, I mean, I'm not terribly intimidated about thinking about him as primarily the backup three there. And that makes a ton of sense to me. I mean, that still leaves you with way too many power forwards. I do like the idea of Fareed back in the energy guy sixth man slot. That's never been his favorite. And frankly, as well as he did with Jokic last year, that's not always been the way he does with other guys. So if he's not going to be playing next to Jokic, can you at least sell high on him when we didn't sell high on some others last year, if there's any way to do that? Because I mean, there's certainly some other guys who could still come in and play behind Millsap at the position pretty easily. Just a tip of the cap to Jameer Nelson, who a couple seasons back came into a really kind of ugly situation and did everything to basically kind of turn the ship around as far as what's going on from a guys getting together and feeling more like family and really everybody on the same page in a great atmosphere. So thank you for that. While I also say I hope he's not back next year. By the time all of this goes, and as scary as it is for me to say so, I mean that even if basically you're going with a Murray, Moutier, Morris 3M. I got there before Woody Page did, you know, with one of those stupid sayings. If that's what you end up rolling to next year, I'm not as freaked out about that. I think Murray is going to step it up, and I think actually I'd like to see how far he can take it if he's given the reins. I certainly am not nearly as freaked out about Moutier as a backup guard, and that's if he can maintain it against a guy who is known for most nights, maybe not tonight, but most nights for not turning the ball over much. So I would roll the dice there possibly.
Yeah, the interesting one there, of course, would be Morris. But, I mean, we've seen it before. Heck, the Rookie of the Year was a second-round pick this season. So it certainly does happen where you get those guys and they end up finding roles right away. I like it. Like, we're going to get into the Summer League game, like I said, and I don't want to spoil it. But I definitely do like – I do like Morris and what he can bring to the Nuggets. It is. Here's the thing: if you're rolling with that three, I mean, that's, you're talking growing pains again,
scary.
Right?
Because it's
yeah, I mean, that's a lot of youth. That's all youth, basically, that you're going to do with there, and that's in a very important position. But somebody's, I mean, Moutier's in his third season. He should, man. If he's not going to do it this year, then you got to wonder if he ever will.
And
but you got such a facilitator with Jokic, you know,
exactly,
so yeah. that helps. Yeah, sorry to.
No, you did it. Grab it, take it. That was awesome. Yeah,
yeah, yep. And you're exactly right, actually, because that's you don't have to have a guy who's a great point guard. You don't have to have Chris Paul, right? Because you've got Nikola Jokic who certainly you run the offense through, and he does makes that really really work for you. So you guys are right. I don't know. To me, if you could upgrade the point guard, obviously it's tough because we missed out on George Hill. We've missed out on really all the point guard guys who are out there in free agency. Now we're probably looking, we're looking overseas was one of the rumors is going on right now. We're probably looking, though, at maybe a trade option. If for me, if they were going to do one move, it would be that would be the knock it out of the park move. At this point, would be trading for Eric Bledsoe from Phoenix, because that way gets you, that gets you a really nice starting caliber point guard who I think would fit really well with this team as well.
Does Phoenix happen to need, you know, three or more power forwards at this point?
That's the problem. No, they don't. So they have Dragan Bender and they have Marquese Chriss already there. So they have two young power forwards, which stinks because right, that's a guy you'd want to trade for Reed. Yeah. Phoenix though is open to salary dumps for draft picks and stuff. I'm not sure. Basically, look it up how much Eric Bledsoe makes, but that would be they wouldn't want to basically be taking taking back any long term salary. So you'd wonder if they'd really want Fried anyways, because he's got two more seasons on his deal, and I think $12 million a year. So let me see. I'm just looking it up right now. Eric Bledsoe, $14 million a season. So. It would save him two. It would save him. How many more years does he have on his deal? It would. Yeah, he's got two more years on his deal. So you would. I mean, maybe actually that's not a bad deal. They trade Bledsoe for Fareed, and you get they save $2 million off the cap. Problem is, they just don't need another power forward.
Yeah.
So
yeah, dang it.
You could go. They'd probably be more interested in a guy like Wilson Chandler, but you know, then you're really thin at power,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
At small forward.
That doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, you don't have any true small forwards at all. So that's what I would want, though, the Nuggets to do, if they figure out some way to get that a deal like that pulled off. But as we kind of were saying, it's going to be tough. So let's talk about this. Ashley, let me ask you first. If the Nuggets make no more moves this offseason, this is basically the roster they're going to roll with. And you're taking everything into account, drafts, free agency, the whole deal. What kind of grade would you give them on their offseason?
I would probably have to say C minus or D plus. I think the draft was so bad. It was so bad. And, you know, Millsap was really great. So they kind of balance each other out a little bit, but I'm still really not excited about what they've done.
Wow, that is C minus D plus. I would be a solid C, because I was my grade for their draft was C minus or D plus. So I think they did a little bit better in free agency. I'd probably give them, like, if I was going to give them a grade right now, free agency, a B, because I think they definitely upgraded the roster with Millsap. But with you losing Gallo and you not picking up a guy like a George Hill or somebody to play, you know, another starting quality starting player, you upgrade one position, but you also lose. That bit with Gallo going out, and you don't replace him, so I don't think you can have it a great offseason. Like I said, if they can figure out a way to trade a guy like Eric Bledsoe, then I'd give him an A, because he's a quality starting point guard. Mike, what about you? What grade would you give him?
I mean, I'd like to give them an incomplete, because I'm hoping that this isn't where this finishes, basically, you know. But I'm in the ballpark there. I'd say... right at the moment, just a C, because I think it really was a trade-off. And I think the weirdest part of all of it was that the guy you were really after all this time, if it really was Millsap, I think Ashley said it earlier, then, you know, why did you drag in, you know, four other power forwards as a part of what the plan was here? So I hope that they're going to still make some changes. All of that said, I can definitely put a roster of 10 guys together in my head that I'm pretty excited to see play ball. And I don't know how much the other seven see the court anyway. It just, you know, if we're lucky enough about injuries. So,
right. Mm-hmm. That is fair. A fair point. I mean, they've got a nice group of players that they can roll with next season right now.
And a lot of point guards just sitting way down at one end of the bench. Talking about point guard or power forwards. I mean,
yeah, power forwards.
Talking about power forward things. So yeah.
There you go. Well, hopefully some of them will be playing down in Sioux Falls. That's where I would send some of those guys. All right. So I want to wrap up our kind of off season discussion. We talked about, I kind of already gave you guys my opinion, but I want your guys' opinion on this as well. We were talking about kind of where the Nuggets would finish out. I think they're somewhere in that 5-8 seed. In the West. Michael, what about you? Knowing now everything we know about how much the West has really got stacked, where do you think the Nuggets end up next year based on what their roster is looking like right now?
I think it might be 5-9 or 5-10, actually, and I'm right there with you. When you'd sent this question out earlier, my gut said, oh, we're the 6 or 7 seed, easy with this upgrade, and then I started thinking about everybody else who's made upgrades, including, as Ashley said, us to the Clippers earlier, you know. So it's going to be interesting. We'll see where it goes. I hope we're the 6 or 7 seed, but frankly, that's just the middle of a damned broad range that I see us possibly landing in.
Right. No, that's definitely fair. And yeah, I would agree too. I mean, I say 5-8, but they could easily be 9th or 10th. I could see them not making the playoffs. I don't think they're a lock in any sense of the word. Ashley, what do you think?
I don't know. I'm skeptical to think that they're going to go high as a 6. So I would probably say, you know, 7-9, you know, maybe even 10. It depends on the moves that they make to focus a little bit. But I'm hopeful that with Paul Millsap, they are going to, you know, make the playoffs. I certainly hope so, because, I mean, they have to for their fans. They have to. Otherwise, they're just going to be in really bad shape at the Pepsi Center.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the other guy, too, is, I mean, Coach Malone, this is kind of his prove-it season, I think, especially because they did bring in a guy like Millsap now. They spent that money. I think that there's no doubt the expectation is, hey, this team can make the playoffs. And it kind of sucks for him, though, right? Because everybody in the West got better. Like, it's like, man, here they go. The Nuggets finally make this move, and they get a really good player, a star-type guy in Paul Millsap. And then everybody else is loading up as well, so it doesn't get any easier. It really reminds me of we're almost getting about 10 years ago now when it was 2008. The Nuggets, they ended up being the 8th seed. They were 50-32 on the season. They won 50 games and got the very last seed, and they got it on like the last game of the year.
Yep.
I think Golden State that year finished like maybe 48 and 34. Or maybe 49-33, but they were right there, and then the Nuggets ended up getting it. It reminds me of that. But this is what's crazy, is I think that there's like a legitimately 10 teams who could win 45 or more games this season in the Western Conference alone. Mm-hmm. I think it's nuts.
Yeah,
but But as weird as it gets some years, I mean, I could just as easily, I mean, let's say for the Clippers, either one of those guys stays injured or, you know, we're all dumb enough to not realize just how big a difference Chris Paul makes to any team he plays on or any of those things. I mean, there's one down, right? Let's say that, you know, Tom Thibodeau plays Jimmy Butler for as many minutes as he played him in Chicago. And by the time the end of the season comes around, he's you know, gassed. There are so many linchpins across all of those teams that we talk about from five to 10, you know, and weirdly, you can even look at some of those top four. And I want to say Houston is obviously a top four team, but, you know, let's say that these two guys who always need the ball in their hands don't gel the way they should. Right. That is not Mike D'Antoni's style of play anymore. And that's what got them to the two seed last year. So it is the weirdest season coming up. I have no clue, because just one or two little dominoes and we're all sitting around, you know, at the end of next year saying, wow, the three seed, did you ever expect the three seed? So I have no idea. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that we don't know how much better guys like Nikola Jokic and Gary Harris are going to get. Everybody's kind of looking at it right now. I'm like, oh, well, yeah, the Nuggets got better and they got Paul Millsap, so they should be fighting right there. But nobody's really considering it. Or think about a guy like Jamal Murray. Like, if there's anybody to talk about, maybe it's Jamal Murray, who basically played played a huge portion of the last season with two sports hernias. Now he's going to be fully healthy. We're finally going to see, they were talking about he may have even got these sports hernias at Kentucky. So now we're finally going to get to see him full strength.
Can you imagine?
They can make some huge additions just internally from development, and they could. Mike, you're right. Maybe they do. Maybe they shock everybody, and they end up being getting a home court advantage in the first round. Still hard for me to see any way they get better than the Warriors, but hey, you never know. You know what? We've seen cases before. What if both Steph and Kevin Durant got injured? You know, then how good would the Warriors be? It just like you said, so many different things.
I don't know. The Warriors signed Nick Young, you know.
Those are
going to be pretty tough.
Things just got swaggy in Oakland.
Swaggy.
Weird, excited.
Oh, man.
They
ended up going with Zaza instead of JaVale, though. I was kind of bummed about that.
You know, I actually, and part of the reason, and Zach, you make a great point about our guys. It was like a month and a half ago, I was writing something about how I think we're in a good spot to be the wave that shows up behind the Warriors if we keep the core that we've got in place, you know, and a lot of those stats, you know, the leap from first year to second year and the leap from second year to third year are typically the biggest jumps that players make. I mean, we could very easily see that from Murray, Harris, and of course Jokic, if they all make a big jump forward in this next year, around a guy like Millsap, things get really interesting.
It's gonna be really cool. They do.
And I always try and you know, I temper my expectations. I learned this from the Rockies, because you'd always go into every Rocky season, you'd be like, well, if this pitcher stays healthy, and if, you know, if this one makes a jump, and well, if this shortstop ends up really being hot in the minor leagues and jumps up to the majors and plays really well, and you start realizing that you're like, well, there's so many well if this happens the odds are long, but it does happen. It does happen. So you
Rockies
never know.
Will leave you jaded, man. I feel like the state of Colorado, we need to like have an intervention with the Rockies. Like, what is it with you guys every year?
It's true. The Rockies are they're the ones who rip your hearts out, and the Nuggets are just the ones who just constantly disappoint.
I'm not ready to talk about the Rockies just yet.
Fair enough.
I'm gonna go get my Woogie.
Hey,
so
they won tonight. They killed it. They won it like 12-3. They absolutely, the bats finally broke out. This is not a baseball podcast though. So we'll get back. We'll go into our final segment, which is I want to talk about, of course, Summer League, because we had the first game tonight. Let's start with that. Let's start with getting our thoughts on the game. I'll kind of give mine real quick. I want to hear you guys first. Ashley, what were you thinking about? What did you think of tonight's game? And the Nuggets, of course, they lose to who the heck were they playing?
The Rockets, Houston. Yeah.
The Rockets. There you go. Thank you. That's how unforgettable Summer League is.
But, I mean, basically you summed it up there, Zach. It was kind of boring, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, I think that it was good to see players like Wancho and Beasley out there. And, you know, I'm not going to be too hard on guys like, you know, Morris and Leiden, and because it's just, right, it's their very first summer league game, right? So I'm going to give them a break, give them a chance to get better and be good. But it's good to see them get out there. At first, they kind of were getting their butts kicked, but they rallied a little bit, which is cool to see. So like to see a little bit of fight in the young guys, but really love to see Wancho and Malik Beasley there on the court. Wancho's one of my favorites. He's just great. So.
And Wancho, you know, he had a little, there was a lot of interesting things I think to take away from Wancho's performance tonight. He started off kind of slow, and then you know, of course he got some open looks and he buries them, because I think Wancho is probably the best shooter. I will say this. This is my podcast hot take. I wish we were like radio and I could press one of those buttons and then we'd have this thing like podcast hot take. We'll have to work on that.
Please don't do that. Please. As an ex-radio guy, please.
So there you go. Mike, you can teach us how to do it, and then we'll figure out. We'll make a little soundboard here. I think Wancho might be the best shooter on the team, especially with Gallo gone now. In terms of just pure shooter, it's probably either Wancho or Jamal. And so he did that really well. But what I thought was interesting about Wancho was they were trying him out at more of a small forward position, right? Because he's probably going to have to play some more of that this season. And he, I thought where he particularly struggles is when he's got to put the ball on the floor and try and drive to the basket. He doesn't quite know how to protect the ball so well, which is I think we saw a couple more than a couple times him. He tried to drive into the lane and he ends up getting the ball stripped away from him. That's something I think is interesting.
Dang goggles
to watch.
On too. I think those were getting in his way. I really do.
I'm super sad. It turned, you know, I think what it was that he just had like LASIK or something. So yeah. That's why he had the goggles. I thought he was just going to roll with them. And I was like, yes, that's going to be, I've wanted some guy to rock the goggles for so long and nobody wants to do it.
I'm not sure you found one yet, but we'll see how it goes.
So Wancho and goggles and a cape, and then he'll be ready.
It's perfect.
other than obviously Wancho and Beasley, who else stood out to you in tonight's game?
I mean, who expected that Robert Carter Jr. goes, was it 17 points that he wrapped up with? Find the box score again. Yeah, 17 points in 23 minutes. I mean, he was fun to watch. I'm excited to see, Xavier Johnson from CU, just as a home state kid. I want to see him play, but but do we really want to, worry about two more forwards, basically on the list right now? I think Carter really had an interesting game, and Morris, I was teasing a little bit earlier for the fact that I'm not sure he had a three turnover game, last season in his last year at Iowa State. But he definitely still, he had a couple of nice steals. He played a lot of minutes. He showed himself well. He was all five of the guys who ended up starting were minus in the plus minus, but Hernan Gomez, Morris, and Beasley were all pretty low in that end. And I think what Ashley said basically about cutting most of these guys some slack, to me it's a lot like asking these guys to put on a play and handing them their scripts last night and basically saying, have fun out there. And it's just there's so much of the rhythm and the meter of what it is they do to play the game that these guys just, it's going to be out of sync half the time they're on the court because they've just never played together this way.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. They basically been given 1 week. It reminds you of like the old Olympic teams. Guys were all stars, but how they just kind of like give them a week or two and they're like, all right, we're going to go. No, let's go play. So you can tell, there's some gelling that's got to happen, which is kind of where I think a guy like Malik Beasley kind of excels in these summer league games. Because he's a guy who can create baskets for himself. He's probably the only guy on this roster who can do that.
He stood out. He was fun to watch, even though he took 8 million shots.
He took 30. Yeah. Not quite 8 million. 12 of 30 from the field for Malik.
He did pull a Carmelo Anthony a little bit. Yeah.
You know what's so crazy? I'm looking at the box score right now, and Wancho, even though I was kind of like, Wancho, I don't know if he had a great night shooting. And he shot 40% from the field, which isn't great. But he shoots 40% from three again. I mean, the guy's just...
That's good.
Oh. Yeah, that's good. He's quite a shooter. Mike, so you know, still looking at his box score, there was three guys who were on the positive end of plus minus tonight. Howard St. Roos, who played all of 2 minutes, was a plus three. Torrey Craig, he was kind of a nice look, but I kind of think he was he was plus six. I think that's kind of a side effect of Robert Carter Jr., who leads the entire team with plus 12. The plus minus, I think, is really interesting on this box score because it does tell the story. Like you said, Mike Wancho, Malik, Monty, they were minuses, but they were very close. The two guys far and away worst on the plus minus spectrum were Tyler Lydon and Peter Cornelie. Or yeah. Cornelie. I don't know. What did you guys think? I thought, man, I mean, Lydon, he showed he had his range. I mean, he can hit some threes. The very first play he had, that it was almost like a Dirk-like turnaround fadeaway from the post. That was very nice. He didn't shoot great. He didn't particularly rebound well. I mean,
He took too many three-point shots. I mean, I saw there was like three or four times he just literally kept going down, and he would just, before he passed, didn't look right to anybody else. He just pulled up, took a three, and missed. Pulled up, took a three, and missed. It's like, dude, yeah. Can't do that.
Yeah, go to maybe a little G League time would be very helpful there, I think.
Yeah. Can I just sidebar here real quick? I refuse to call it the G League. All right, that is the dumbest.
I know.
Thank you. Okay, it was difficult. I stumbled there. The D League. God,
the D League, right?
And while we're there, can we get a friggin' D League team? I know this is not on tonight's. Please, could we please just be one of the last few teams in the league?
We can start a D League team with our power forwards.
There it is.
There it is.
Boom.
They're still an arena in Brookfield. Come on, guys. Ashley would love forwards. To see a bunch of power forwards down in the Springs. Come on.
Guy Sox are leaving. We'd love that.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah. They got to put it somewhere. I think, like obviously it's not happening this season. I think it'll happen by next season, to be honest with you. I think they got to do something with the D League team because now and this ties back into summer league. They have the two extra roster spots, and they can do two-way contracts, which is essentially guys get paid a D League wage when the D League, and then they can come up to the NBA level and they can get paid their NBA wage. So that's a brand new feature to this season that was part of the new CBA, and obviously now the rosters expand from 15 roster spots to 17. Still only 13 players dress for a game, but you can have two guys, two extra guys on your roster who essentially, if they're on two-way contracts or guys you're sending down to the D-League, that's exactly what that contract setup is for. And the Nuggets could, man, think about it, who's going to get, I guess, the Nuggets, look, they'll find a way to send guys to D-League. They'll send them to Sioux Falls or whoever's going to be their partner for that now. And I'm looking at this right now, and after, especially tonight, if I'm looking at, like, who do you think these two guys, I'm trying to think, because what's funny is I think probably Monty Morris and Nikola Radicevic, those are the two guys who I thought looked the best out of the, like, two-way contract candidates, because Wancho and Malik, those guys are already signed, Tyler Lydon's already signed to guaranteed deals. Mike, what about you? Do you think, or maybe like, is Robert Carter, because it always happens every year. There's one guy, last year was Jarnell Stokes. There's some guy who impresses in summer league, gets training in camp invite, impresses in training camp in preseason, makes the team. Who do you think, basically, because the Nuggets have three roster spots open right now. Who do you think on this team could fill those spots?
You know, actually, I mean, it's sure. So first off, Carter was really efficient tonight, right? He was 5 of 7 from the field.
Right.
And you go back and you look at a few of his games last season. He played summer league for Golden State last year, And he looked pretty good for them too. It just, I mean, talk about a team that was already stacked. It just, they just didn't need him. And I think he went overseas. I don't remember, but I know he played last year, after all of that. And so, you know, a couple more games like this, he certainly could be somebody you talk about in that sort of, you know, need one more guy in the three slot that you were talking about as a possibility.
Right. Yeah, he could too, and I thought he looked nice. And I should clarify when I say they have three roster spots open, which they have a roster spot open that was occupied by Roy Hibbert. He's obviously not coming back, so that's one. And then they have Mike Miller is officially still on the roster, but they could cut him, and that will be two. His deal is non-guaranteed, so they can cut him for free if they want to. And then obviously Plumlee right now is, we're not sure what's going to happen there. With Mason Plumlee, so those are the three spots that are open or could be open. In addition to the two extras, so they could potentially have as much as five spots open. They've got the three now because Roy Hibbert's gone, plus the two extras that they get for the new CBA. I guess it really comes down to what else they're going to do in the offseason, right? Because if they could still. There was the talk about the Wanamaker guy from over in Europe. Maybe he's a point guard who they thought about bringing in. It seems like they want to bring in one more guy to fill one of those spots. So it's going to come down, I think, to two guys on this summer league team are going to get an offer. Unless I'm not 100% sure. Mason Plumlee, I don't know what they're going to do with Plumlee. It's kind of an interesting situation. But essentially, if there's two guys for me. Then Robert Carter's out, because you're probably, if it were me, I would sign Monty Morris and I would sign Radicevic, and those would be my two guys. If Plumlee doesn't come back, if they make some sort of deal where they consolidate some guys, the two for one, or they trade a guy for a pick, or they just flat out salary dump a guy, and they get that third spot open, I could see at least Robert Carter Jr. I think he gets a training camp invite, and he has a shot at that final spot. Ashley, what about you? Who do you think, I'll let you kind of wrap us up here, who do you think kind of stands out as far as these fringe guys who might be able to make the team?
You know, I'm going to agree with you and Monty Morris and Radicevic, but I will say that I'm interested to see how Summer League develops. I mean, some of these guys, this is the very first time they're playing in an NBA type team, and you know, I'm sure nerves are getting to them and they're young. And so I am interested to see kind of who steps up after tonight's game. And even after the first few days, you know, I think Nikola Jokic was obviously a late bloomer. And so, you know, right. it's anybody's spot. So,
right.
Great point.
You know what? And I always say this about Summer League, because people get take things way out of proportion. Everybody's really bummed about Donovan Mitchell looking really good in Summer League, because of course that was the Nuggets pick, and they traded back. They could have had him, but you take everything in Summer League with a grain of salt, because the competition level is not the same as the NBA. Not even close. So, but at the same time, you can take things like, you mentioned Jokic. I remember the very first time I really got to watch other than just, you know, highlight films, the very first time I ever got to watch Jokic live was in Summer League. And the very first thing I noticed about him was, man, that guy can really pass. Mm-hmm. So you can definitely glean things from him. And what I noticed tonight about Morris and Radicevic is they looked comfortable running the offense, playing the point guard position. I thought Morris had a little bit, we were trying to talk about this during the game. I thought he had a little bit of Andre Miller's type of game in him. He's not a great distance shooter, but he's a really good passer. He's really good. Looks like he has a really good mid-range game. And then Radicevic, he just looked comfortable. He looked really, really comfortable. He got a little flashy, throwing a lot of behind-the-back passes there in the first half, and then he had some turnovers. He had some turnovers in the second half that got a little sloppy. But I thought overall he just looked really comfortable out there, and was making the right pass, was reading what the defense was giving, and was playing well. So we'll close on that. I think that's a good just about hour-long podcast that we got there. So We will be back next weekend. We'll wrap up with what Summer League happened. If maybe any other free agency stuff breaks, we'll get a chance to talk about it. But we will talk to you guys then. Mike, Ashley, as always, I appreciate it. I'm always happy to have two CSU Rams with me on the cast.
Go Rams.
All right. Go Rams. All right.
There you go.
Thank you both. All right, everybody. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. Mm-hmm.
We'll talk to everybody next week.
Thanks for listening to the Pickaxe Podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.